say that we are certain that the current conditional assignment permit meets the legal definition of a license, but never have we intended to imply that that's a mandate that we do this. And I think that's a little bit of a misunderstanding out there. It's more about why would you treat this license any differently than your other licenses, and about getting it into our business process. And so in the interest of getting it into the business process, of having an application and having it move through, even $25, which is token, not zero, Jason, but it's, you know, 25, it's better, really allows us to get these treated other than a stack of papers on a desk that people get to when they're ready. And so that argument of, I think somewhere during the conversation, the expectation got elevated about, you know, being able to get instant information on the cap, but as Lynn explained, there the nuances are just enormously complex for what is required to add the 36 plus possibilities onto about a dozen variations of licenses, especially when you start adding authorizations in. Authorization is really complicated things, I will tell you that. I'm not going to birdwalk, but the so it is a license. The commission could continue to do a non-professional, in my mind, that's my word only, process and issue a letter of permission and then slap it up on the web. But I think that we actually gained some benefit through our conversations by getting consensus about maybe it would work better to expire these at the end of the year. So it's about treating the legal license like we do all the rest of our licenses, even the temporary ones. And so we all know this is a temporary license. In some ways, it doesn't look a ton different than a restricted transitional nowadays. So it's about getting consistent in our business processes and treating everything with the same rights. And as our council did explain to us, if we wanted to take it away, we would have to do due process and everything else because it is a license. It is work. It is substantial work. It's more work than doing renewals, and we charge $100 for renewals. And so they do, whether you believe it or not, it doesn't matter. If we change nothing, these still slow down the work. We think we might be able to improve things by getting it into the flow of the work. So that's kind of that part.
And I would like to maybe finish by addressing some of the other issues that some of our speakers had raised. I really agree with Chuck. We don't want this to be a hardship. So we're not looking at changing the deadlines and the timelines that districts have, because right now at the beginning of a term, districts already have till October 1st, or they have two weeks after putting somebody into an assignment, into a cap, to apply. We don't want to change that. We have not wanted to burden people with the cost, knowing that there would be a cost attached, but that's why we keep sort of lowering it. And I really do understand the concerns about people being happy with the way things are, so why are you really changing this? Part of it is because people don't know right away what they need to do with a cap. And that process is the same as it is right now, right? I mean, right now, once we finally can issue a cap and send someone a letter, if it says, well, you're going to have to do a program to get this done, they can be in a world of hurt because it's now been some time. Now, what we're proposing to continue to do in that case is, if it takes us 6 months, we're going to tack on that additional 6 months so that the educator is not inconvenienced because of our time frame. So we're hoping that that does not change in any way just what the expectations will be on the teachers, and that it really won't be a burden, but that now they're going to have even a little bit more formal way of knowing that. Also, I can really appreciate Jason's comment about the communication. Yes, that's a thought. I'm going to be talking a little bit later today, I think, about some of the things that we are trying to do to improve that communication. What I am hoping to do is not only just improve the letters that are sent out so that they're hopefully accurate when people get them, which I'm realizing, hey, that would be a nice way to start. So our letters are not keeping up with our rules, and they need to get caught up. So that's my primary goal right now, is to try to do that. But it's also to be able to send emails out to different classes of educators and say hello, just to make sure that you know this. We want to keep you informed. And the newsletter that we've been sending out to the districts, we would like to continue that, but we'd also like to do one for educators that can then go out to all of them as well, so that we are hopefully doing a better and a proactive job of keeping people informed as to what we're doing. So that's part of the hope as well. Probably haven't addressed everything, but that was the attempt.
Some of the issues and questions raised are related to logistics that really would apply whether we were keeping caps the same as they are now or we went to the LCA. And the issue here in front of us is really, are we moving to the LCA? And I think those other things can be worked out once that first initial decision is made. I do want to ask the commission if anyone's feeling like they're unsure yet and need more information, have questions, or if you already feel like you know where you stand on this. Kind of questions still from the commission? A couple. Okay. Will you help me? Okay. Nancy, and then Tom.
I'm glad you got me first so I don't forget. what's the duration of most caps?
Right now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on what they are. If they, first of all, if you see ESOL and special ed and reading down here, like you see on several hundred, they're 3 years because they require a program.
Okay, I think my question had more to do is that do most people who end up with a cap continue on to teach that for...
How many get converted?
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
We did that a few years ago, and I'm relying on my memory, but it was more than I thought. But there were, as you can see, there are quite a few caps out there. These are used as permission slips to move people around. So that's why we put the show progress thing in there, and I think it was based on that information. I can get that. I don't have it.
Because it makes a difference to me in one sense is, are they on a cap for a year? I mean, if they're only on a cap for a year because it's absolutely necessary at that time, that's a different issue than whether or not they're going to go on to get an endorsement and continue to teach in that area.
Well, one of the ways we attempted to tackle that in this design and in some of the changes in the cap was precisely by requiring that no initial cap is issued for more than a year, and if you're required to do a program, that you're showing progress. Because what we didn't want is the same thing we didn't want with the restricted transitional, where these people are teaching for 3 years and making no efforts to become teachers. We don't want people teaching special ed who aren't enrolled in a program and getting some preparation in the area for 3 years. And that was the situation we had. So the way this would work is if the requested cap area requires a program, before they can get it for the next school year, they need to show us that they've enrolled in a program, that they're making progress and that sort of thing. Then it goes another year, then they have to show that they're significantly into the program. That was to prevent 3 years of that, because in the alternative you could say, oh, you need to do a program, we're going to give you 3 years to do that, and we weren't going back and checking in, and then people would go all the way through and do nothing. So part of this has been designed to build in a monitoring to make sure we don't have people teaching out of field in some of these really critical areas, high need areas, without getting any assistance or preparation.
If it expired at the end of the year, would they have to reapply the next year and pay a fee again?
Yes. But we made that nominal. But they also have to show transcripts and everything.
Well, I mean, I agree. I'm not being critical of it. I just didn't know the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Did that help you? Tom.
Lynn, thanks for the great preparation on this. I think the question and answer really helps. And it's good. That's clear. I'm particularly thankful for the information in 17E. And my question is,
would moving to this LCA in any way sort of help create a more equitable distribution? Because it seems to me that we have four school districts of relative same size, and yet the range of caps is pretty big. I mean, the district in position four and position one, you know, I think they have relatively the same student population. So would this in some way help us make that a more equitable distribution? Because the first school district has twice as many as the fourth school district.
In my understanding, part of that is due to that first district requiring any classroom teacher who has ELL students, and I think is a certain number, to get an ESOL endorsement, even though they're not really an ESL teacher. They're like an elementary classroom teacher. So they're requiring them to get the cap so that they can require them to complete the requirements to add the endorsement. That's why they have so many more. That was my understanding from the February 1st meeting.
That's a condition of employment?
That's an employment thing, so.
Well, I know, but can't, they could do that as a condition of employment and then not burden the TSPC with all of this additional work.
So I'm just suggesting.
Well, this won't address that then. Okay. It won't address equitable distribution, or will?
I think it will depend on how that district responds to perhaps a fee being imposed or to the other issues or concerns that they've addressed or suggested. I don't know. Thank you.
Okay, commissioners, the fundamental question again here is moving from the cap as we know it to the LCA, including the application process and $25 fee. Yes, Vicki.
Sorry, just one tiny thing. All we're asking is that you move it to hearing. I just didn't want people to lose sight of that. Sometimes we lose sight of that when we start talking about the details. If you move it to hearing, I think you are signaling the field that you have an intention of moving forward. I mean, let's just be direct about it. If you have no intention of moving it forward, then you shouldn't move it to hearing.
And that's where I want to find out where the commission is. Mike, and then Bill.
I don't really have a problem with moving it. I view this as the LCA as a response to a procedural issue that we have problems with. And that's an internal mechanism. So putting it into the pipeline so that it gets treated as regular licensure work, I have no problems with that. Even attaching a fee to help offset the cost. I mean, to my way of looking at it, moving it into the regular scope of work isn't necessarily going to speed it up. It just isn't going to be done last, which was what I was hearing, was it sits on one desk in a pile and only gets dealt with when there's no other work that people are paying for to be done. Then we get to those things that we don't get paid for to do. If you move it into the system and you pay for it, then you should expect a quicker turnaround, and that makes sense. I have an issue with calling it a license still, because if a teacher wants to get a license, they can get a license. It doesn't require a district to give them permission to get a license. They don't have to have the district sign off to get a teaching license, but a cap requires a district's collusion with that teacher to get it done. And it's one of the few things that bothers me about calling it a license, because it cannot stand on its own. In answer to Nancy's question, can it stand on its own? No, you can't even get a LCA without already holding a license. So to me, it's really an extension of an endorsement. It's not a license, it's a conditional extension of endorsements, allowing you to teach outside of your area more than two periods a day.
Or authorization?
Well, authorization, endorsement, it depends on which, you know, I'm a basic standard type of person still, so so I have issues with the whole thing. But I still don't like initial one, initial two, and continuing and all of that. I'm just saying from my perspective, I like the idea of moving it into the system to make it a more formal process and to speed it up and to get rid of the issue of stigma. Those are the freebies. We do them last. I like to get rid of that.
I like the idea of being able to track progress and to do it online. I just have an issue with calling it a license.
Bill, and then Vicki, and then Shirley.
Well, you know, I've been angry this morning about this whole thing, and I'm trying to figure out why in the heck I'm angry. And then I realized I'm angry because I'm naive. I was naive a long time ago when Chuck and Teresa and Jim Green from OSBA, when the four of us really helped hammer out what CAP was. And the whole thing was intended for districts like Gordon's, where they run into trouble and they've got to go beyond the two periods in order to get a science section filled or a math section filled. But it's certainly never intended for us to suggest that somebody step into a special ed classroom. And that's part of what's gotten me angry, is this thing has morphed into something that when we crafted it, or helped the commission craft it, it had absolutely nothing to do with the four largest school districts in the state having all of those caps. And then to look down and see that it's in ESOL and special ed and reading, that really frosts my cookies. and so that's my problem this morning, is that we're looking at changing this thing to a license. My gosh, I think we really need to go back and take a look at what we're allowing the CAP to do.
Thank you, Bill. I do think that we have the 10-hour flexibility currently, aside from the CAP, the 10-hour flexibility to allow for situations like that. And I would have to argue that just because you're a large district does not mean that you don't have very difficult to fill positions. And as we've had an increase in the need for special ed teachers and ESL teachers, and we don't have the output, there is still the need for some kind of cap. Vicki.
You can still call it a cap. You don't have to call it a license for conditional assignment. Silly me, I thought it would clear things up. But you can, now that we've established that legally it is a technical license, you can still call it a cap. I mean, I wanted to make sure you knew that. So
what you're saying is we could leave it, but we're just looking at adjusting more the application process and the fee. And of course, we want to implement things like the web. And
look at the other things we've all talked about. I mean, you could still call it a cap, but...
So is the rule then really related to making the CAP require a C1 form application and fee?
And understanding it's a license. I think we needed to go through that partially.
So
anyway, that's all. I just, did that confuse things? I thought that might help. That's a question.
I think that helps. Shirley? We're just going to take a couple more and then kind of figure out where we are at this moment.
Okay.
Mike.
No.
Mario.
So now I'm really confused. I'm going to frost my cookies. I'm not really confused, just clarification. So what I heard you say, Vicki, is we will still just call it a cap, but still have a license to it. I heard you say that. Yeah. Maybe I misunderstood. So that's why I want some clarification.
We really didn't change the guts of the CAP rule. You still have to have the underlying license and everything else. And so you don't have to call it a license for conditional assignment. I just thought that would clarify things and elevate it status in its importance, because I think a lot of people don't treat it like it is a very important misassignment responsibility. But if you think it would make it easier in terms of understanding and things, you could still call it I have to think about that, because we have, just let me talk to Roland.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. They're going to chat. With that idea, I'm not sure that we're ready to move forward on the action item as it sits in front of us. Yeah. Commissioners, how many of you are ready to move on it? A couple. I don't know whether you're going to be moving on it in the affirmative or...
That wasn't the question.
Yeah, exactly.
You can straw vote. You guys have done that before.
Okay, straw vote then. But now are we still talking about the naming of LCA?
Oh, that's up to you guys. I mean, you don't even have to decide that today, because if you move it to hearing, you can decide all your details down the road when you're really talking seriously about adoption. I mean, because we would have to, there's things that have been discussed that aren't written down that would need to be incorporated through the hearing process, like the end of the school year. The dates aren't even in there, I noticed just now. I mean, so you don't have to decide all that right now. You just need to sort of decide whether you're going to...
Mike.
There are two results on this, so we are deciding something. That's why I would, in my straw vote, I'd have to vote nay. There's two results. One is resolved that the rule be moved forward to hearing for adoption at the May 2011 meeting. Resolved further that the LCA takes effect on September 1, 2011. I'm not comfortable with calling it an LCA.
Oh, okay.
And
well,
so
yeah,
there's
well,
two resolves on this.
Can I address something really quick?
Yeah.
Procedurally, what's happening is you're deciding whether or not you're going to send something through a rulemaking process. What happens in that process is you may start out with a draft. You're going to receive some sort of input either in writing or in the form of a rule sheet. After that comment comes in, you're still going to be able to deliberate and determine whether you want to do things that look exactly as they are today, whether you're going to modify them somewhere along the process based on the input and the comments that you receive, or you might end up deciding that you're not going to do anything and leave and not adopt those rules. So the fact that there are two results here that say, right, that the one that takes effect on September 1st, that's not making a final decision that it is going to take effect on September 1st. It simply indicates that your intention that if you send this to hearing, it would be the intent that whatever comes out at the end is going to take effect September 1st.